Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 273.
This week on the podcast, Fire and Fury paints Donald Trump as the exact lazy, incompetent federal employee he most fears.
Plus, Donald Trump definitely isn't a stable genius, but he sure tried to play one on TV today.
And fire up your iPod and blast some Gangnam Style, because the 2012 presidential candidates are back and coming to a Senate race near you.
Plus, why do so many men brag about having destructive buttons on their desk?
And there's something called a lizard blizzard happening in Florida right now, which sounds right.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
We're back.
We're back.
Happy New Year.
Yeah.
We did it.
Yeah.
Made it to 2018 without dying in a nuclear war.
Lila got back yesterday. She was supposed to get back Sunday. And we have been really wanting to do a podcast.
No.
More than maybe ever in this lifetime.
I almost died in a blizzard war, but I managed to survive just to bring you this podcast. Thankfully, the blizzard war gave everyone more time to get through Fire and Fury. Right. Of course, I didn't need it. I finished it on Saturday.
I know.
But
I know.
But I wanted to...
The day that they announced... Well, yeah, like... On Thursday, when they were like, P.S., we're putting this out tomorrow, you were like, yeah.
Yeah, and I was supposed to go see I, Tonya again with my mom morning, and she was like, do you want to stay and read the book? And I was like, yes.
Yes.
So I just stayed at home and read for the entire day on Friday and Saturday.
Boy. But before we get into that,
yes,
because we're getting into it.
We're going to get into it. A few things. Puerto Rico still doesn't have any power.
God, can we end this weekly reminder, not because...
We're bored of it.
We're just going to stop.
Right.
But because
Puerto Rico have power.
Can they get power?
A little infrastructure work and stopped hiring incompetent companies based in places like Montana to do the work.
Yeah. Well, we're thinking about infrastructure again. I don't know if you've heard.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, I heard.
I'm sure that he doesn't mean infrastructure in Puerto Rico.
No.
He probably means infrastructure that affects people that he deems Americans.
Exactly.
Which, unfortunately, despite the facts, doesn't seem to include people in Puerto Rico.
No.
CHIP and DACA also still hang in the balance.
Well, haven't renewed those. No.
But did you see that today a federal judge in California
ruled
that they have to continue DACA until they didn't end it properly or something?
Yeah. Well, don't worry, guys, because Donald Trump wants the Republican Congress to pass a bill of love, I believe, as he called it.
Yes, he did.
And that's...
Sounds like the last time that he said that, which was another time that we didn't pass a bill of love.
Sounds the same amount of creepy as the last time that he said it, too.
Also, the same amount of implausible.
Yeah, I know. By the way, if you hear a bunch of noises like this, that's the winter coat that I'm wearing inside Lila's apartment right
now. Listen, I think we've made it clear that my apartment is not made for any sort of extreme weather. And that doesn't just include the extreme heat.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've nearly passed out in the middle of this podcast before in the summer.
And now we might freeze to death because I don't have a heater.
No.
The heater that I do have does not have the pilot light lit. And so we're just freezing in here.
Yeah,
we're just going to go for it, you know? At
least,
usually we get hot doing the podcast because we get worked up. This, I feel like this time will just be a comfortable temperature by the podcast. Speaking of cold things, by the way, the figure skating nationals were this weekend.
Yes,
now,
guys.
Obviously, you don't listen to this podcast for updates on U.S. figure skating.
Well, who fucking cares?
Too late.
Because this is the first time Lila and I have seen each other in 3 weeks, so we might just talk about figure skating for an hour.
Exactly.
You know what? Settle in.
And there were politics there as well.
There were.
Yeah. Once again.
There were.
Once again.
Somebody dramatically gets left off
finisher
of the team.
Made the team.
Yeah. And they left off the second place finisher, too. Not even the third place finisher.
This is exactly what I said they should have done. Because who the fuck is
Ross Miner? Nobody.
Nobody knows.
No. Yeah.
It was a great achievement for him to get second at Nationals. But no one knows who he is.
Also, I was seeing this being passed around Facebook the other day. So the person that they picked who was in fourth place is Adam Rippon, who we took Richard Simmons' workout class with, by the way, at Slimmons. Before he went missing.
I know.
And it's no surprise that he went missing 1 month after that because he was clearly had devolved into a state of, I don't know.
That was quite an experience.
By that time. But anyway, regardless of that, we've seen Adam Rippon dance around shirtless at Slimmons.
So true.
While I was dancing around shirtless at Slimmons.
Everyone who's male at Slimmons was forced to dance around shirtless.
Wasn't comfortable.
No.
But anyway, it's a story.
He seemed comfortable.
He was fine. Yeah. But anyway... So he gets fourth place, had a terrible long program. Anyway,
yeah.
But he is, did you know, and this is going to blow your mind, or maybe you read about it the other day, but he's the first out gay winter Olympian.
No.
Ever.
What? Ever?
Yes. Yes.
What?
That's right. Yeah.
That's...
Well, Johnny Weir wasn't out during the winter Olympics. Oh my God.
That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
I know.
How many figure skating events do men compete in? There's ice dancing. There's pairs.
That's right.
There's men's individual skating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Oh my God.
Adam Rippon.
And that...
And he was asked about what it's like being a gay male athlete, and he was quoted as saying, it's a lot like being a straight male athlete, but with better eyebrows.
He does really, like, own...
He does.
Being gay.
Oh, I love the shit out of him. I've grown to love him.
All of his Instagram posts are tagged like Instagay, gays of Instagram and stuff like that.
He's not playing around.
He's not. He's gay and he wants you to know it.
That's right.
Also, if you didn't know it, his program shared it with you. So,
yeah, his short program is like a gay club song.
Correct.
Some shimmying.
A lot
involved.
Of shim. Yeah. More shimmying than. And I appreciated it because there were like four guys who looked identical to me who were all competing in the final group.
Yeah.
And I was like, who the fuck are you people? But then I could tell who Adam Rippon was because he was the one who looked like them, but gayer.
That's right. Oh, boy. Anyway.
We were thankful for that.
So there you go.
Winter
Olympics coming
out
next month.
Yeah.
1 month from right now.
That's right. Get ready for us to obsess about that. As if you're a longtime listener, you know that we get into the Olympics.
Yeah.
It's the only sporting event that I care deeply about. I don't know why. Also, before we dive finally into Fire and Fury, one more thing. If you have not been listening to Slow Burn, the Slate Watergate podcast.
Oh, you've been telling me about this for weeks and I
have
not been listening to
it. You have to do it. It's so perfect. A, because you finally get some like frame of reference for what you could expect to happen with all the many scandals that are encompassing the Trump administration.
Sure.
And also like what a reasonable time frame is. And also like how interesting... A lot, like, now we're sort of like, this is all just a circus, and we have Scaramucci and blah, blah, blah. And they had those players, too, during Watergate.
Right.
They just got forgotten by history because they weren't, like, important players to the actual, like, legal proceedings.
Yeah. Right.
But there were plenty of exciting stories going on during Watergate. People were just as enamored with following the news as they are now with Trump-Russiagate, if not more.
Yeah. The one thing that I read, and I can't even remember who said this, and I found it fascinating, somebody was quoted as saying... During Watergate, like, they said Richard Nixon might have survived had there been Fox News during Watergate, which
I
found fascinating.
But
I can't
actually, I don't think that's true because...
I don't necessarily agree with that either, and I haven't listened to this podcast, but I found it fascinating in the sense that, like, my guess is that there was a lot more sort of, like, coalescing around the rage from... members of both parties
that's where you're wrong. I didn't know until I was listening to the podcast.
Well, then I do
have
to listen to
this. The thing I had forgotten about Richard Nixon was he was elected with the largest landslide in American history, but like after the scandal started. They had already uncovered that the Watergate break-in had already happened when he won that landslide victory where the only state he lost was Massachusetts.
Fascinating.
He was wildly popular. He was wild, and for a lot of the same rhetoric that Donald Trump is wildly popular.
So interesting.
And they describe in the podcast how tribal Congress and the Senate were at that time as well. So it was the Senate Republicans covered for him for years.
Wow, that is fascinating.
So it's not as simple as, if we had the information. Because they talk about how people were stubbornly sticking by him after it seemed like very obvious that he had that he had been personally responsible in like a number of really creepy things that had definitely broken the law. There were still like the same guys who were like, Trump forever sitting on Long Island were sitting there being like, no, he's our guy. I don't care about the details because he's going
to
clean everything up. It was just, it was just like now if the Trump administration were polished professionals who were just shady as shit.
Right.
As opposed to, like, complete incompetence.
Right.
Which brings us
to
Fire
and
Fury.
Which is a good segue.
Right.
There you go. Yeah.
So this all began when... So Michael Wolff, who's a journalist, who wrote... I think he wrote Television's New Television, which is about the Murdoch phenomenon, if you will, and Fox News. A copy of it leaked to The Guardian, and it got excerpted in New York Magazine. In New York Magazine.
It was a fairly long...
excerpt and an amazing read.
Right. Yeah, I know.
If you don't read the book, at least read that.
Well, and I kept paying it forward from you because you asked me if I had read it. And at that point, I was like, No, but I saw the headlines and I've seen the immediate fallout was the Bannon fallout. Right. And I was like, no, but I haven't read the excerpt yet. And she was, and you said to me, you were like, read every word of it immediately. Stop whatever you're doing. And I kept telling people the same thing. I was talking to people and I was like,
you had to sit and read it. It was long. Yeah, it was long. You thought to yourself, I'll be bored.
You had
but
to find a quiet place in the office.
Yeah. Just, you had to go into a corner and read it. It was called Donald Trump Didn't Want to Be President.
Right.
And it basically laid the case for how Donald Trump did not want to or expect to be president.
Right.
Which seems fairly obvious.
Right.
But also it makes a lot of other exciting revelations, such as that Bannon said that he believed Trump committed treason regarding the Don Jr. Russians and Trump Tower meeting. That basically
Sloppy Steve. By the way.
We finally hit the alliteration.
Yeah, I said texted you at one point. I was like, for this being this branding genius, we have often given him grief for a lot of his, you know, terrible monikers that he's given people aren't good. And I'm like, can I at least, I've said it on this podcast before, can I at least get some alliteration with these stupid
names? It's that simple.
It's not hard. No. Think of another word that starts with the same letter as the person that you're trying to name. But I guess when you're a functional illiterate, it's hard to think of words that have the same first letter as other words.
It must be. He doesn't have a large vocabulary.
But he finally got one with Sloppy Steve. So I commend him for that, if literally nothing else of his entire presidency.
At least at an eighth grade level. Maybe a sixth grade level. I might be giving him too much credit.
Yeah.
But it was at least on brand. Yes. Steve Bannon is gross.
He's absolutely disgusting.
And it describes...
He's the only man ever that has worn two button-up
the
shirts.
The book repeatedly describes fatigues. How many shirts he's wearing.
I know.
Which is the best part of the entire thing. But basically, the article says that everyone on Trump's staff knows he's a complete idiot.
Yes.
And that he's basically functionally illiterate. That he... it's not clear that he has a grasp on how to read in a functional manner.
He doesn't have the best words.
He doesn't have the best words.
Doesn't have very many words.
Yeah.
Let alone... good ones.
We all pre-order the book at that point because we're like not fools.
Yeah.
And then the book's supposed to be released on the 9th. It's going to be a week away. Everybody on the news has a copy, which was infuriating. And even the Comedy Central host
had
copies.
Lila was texting me and was like, I'm watching news right now. They're holding up copies of the book. Where do I go and mug somebody in New York City?
Can I mug Lawrence O'Donnell? Is he in New York or LA at this point? Where is Rachel?
Yeah, Lila was going to commit like
a crime.
A felony.
Yeah, I was going to commit a felony to get that fucking book. In any case. So then, hilariously, Trump's lawyers decided the best response to this would not be to lay low and try to make the president look like a functional human being, but to instead send a cease and desist letter to Michael Wolff himself and Henry Holt, the publishers.
But first to Steve Bannon, though, too, wasn't it? Didn't he send a...
Yeah,
right?
He also sent one to Steve Bannon.
Which is like... Steve Bannon is in a hole somewhere right now.
Right.
Like, and also,
well,
like...
No, the best part...
You can't cease and desist something that you...
Sent a cease and desist letter and also made a really nasty comment about Steve Bannon. And Steve Bannon was just about to say he stands by the president and then rescinded his comment and then just decided he didn't care.
So good.
But so in any case, because he sent cease and desist letters to the publisher was like, fine, we're going to put it on sale tomorrow.
We'll release it tomorrow.
So they decided that on Friday at 9 a.m. it would go on sale. Now, at a bookstore in D.C., there was widely reported because it was in D.C., where all the political reporters are. There was like a line at midnight, and they sold out in 20 minutes. And it was impossible to find a hard copy of the book on Friday.
I was going to say, and you also couldn't. It was, when I went to go buy the Kindle version on Friday, it was out of, like, they're rushing to print. I saw a story today that they're trying to print, like, millions of more copies because, like, people have ordered it and it hasn't shipped yet.
Yeah. Fortunately, because I bought the Kindle copy, it just arrived on my Kindle on Friday morning, and I immediately sat down to read it and didn't stop until Saturday.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
Now, I also sat down to do the same thing on Friday, but I am just, sadly, A, slower reader than you, and B, I'm much more easily distracted by, you know, 2 hours of The Bachelor last night.
Yeah.
So I have problems.
The only reason I didn't get it finished on Friday was because the figure skating nationals were on.
I know.
That's the only reason
the
I didn't.
Women's long programs on Friday.
Yeah, I wasn't
going
to miss that. I'm not an idiot. But in any case, I'd finished the book by end of day Saturday, and I have theories. Theories are just coming out of my ears. And I want to say one thing to begin with, which is I'm calling BS on anyone who, aka the Republicans, who are trying to claim that this book is dubiously sourced, that Michael Wolff is not a professional, that no one's sure if the quotes are real quotes. It doesn't, once you read it, you're like, oh no, this happened. Like, you read it and you're like, most of this is stuff we already knew happened.
Right.
We just hadn't seen it sort of in context this way.
Well, and he even says in the beginning of the book that basically, like, there are some things that I do not have actual, like, necessarily firsthand accounts of, but I had 74 people tell me the same thing.
Exactly.
So I have decided that that is probably what happened.
Michael and like, Wolff is a professional journalist.
Right, this is what he does.
This is what he does.
Right. That's why also, they allowed him to sit in the fucking White House and then follow them all around and interview them, some of which are on tape, by the way.
They are now trying to pretend like they never invited him to the White House, which is laughable because there are at least 20 separate occasions in which he was invited to the White House.
Yeah.
But so it doesn't matter, though, because when you read it, most of what he reports there was reported in the news. You just didn't know the context of it fully.
Right.
And you also didn't have it in order because there was so much chaos going on. And at the time, you were like assuming that the president was at least mildly literate and competent. And when you kind of read it with the new understanding that he's not, everything that you already knew happened
just
reads differently.
Clicks right into place.
Yeah. Because a lot of the early nonsense that happened because there were warring factions inside the White House that the president himself didn't really have a sort of stance on.
Right.
He was just saying yes to everybody.
Right.
So Steve Bannon is in there trying to do his sort of like shock doctrine style.
Right.
You know, we'll do the Muslim ban. We'll do whatever.
Right. He's secretly writing executive orders that have not been looked at by anyone in the federal government at all. Stephen Miller wrote that, by the way. And he's probably also a functional illiterate, by the way.
But also, we knew that at the time.
We did.
So it's not like it's not a stretch to say that Steve Bannon and Steve Miller were sitting in the West Wing drafting up random executive orders and having Trump sign them. We knew that that was what was happening. We knew at the time that that was the plan.
Right.
Meanwhile,
and the other thing that I feel like with all of these books, and this seems to happen because it happened with Shattered and it has happened with Game Change. You know,
I
love a Game Change. And that's how
that's
this
coming.
Reads.
Yeah, this reads like Game Change, and Game Change is still coming.
Right. And so all of these books come out, and like, you maybe hear from the main character, sort of like in this case, Donald Trump. And I guess sort of Steve Bannon, at least in the initial release, played an important part of this. I don't really know that he does throughout the entire book.
His voice is. Because he's one of the only people in the White House who's literate, and I say that knowing he's crazy, but I just mean he is the only person in the White House who is, like, mentally competent in a regard, and because of that, his voice is sort of necessary because he's the only one who has any sense of the consequences of anything that they're doing.
Right, but what you don't hear, though, is, you know, you don't hear Ivanka Trump out on the news saying, oh, I never told anybody how my dad had scalp reduction surgery to get his hair like that.
No one's denied any of it.
You don't hear any denials other than Trump himself just generally saying that Michael Wolff is
He's never heard of him and he's never,
So that, I feel like, is the way that you know.
Yeah.
Or one of the ways that you
Normally, if something like this came out and there were actual parts of it that were not accurate.
Right.
And that were under review. Right. Someone would come out and deny that they had said the thing.
Right.
No one has denied any of this. There are a lot of people quoted in this book who do not deny saying any of it.
Right. Correct.
And have not even come out and said that they were misrepresented.
Right.
I mean, that's what's so. And also, this guy wrote a similar book about Rupert Murdoch, whom Donald Trump was desperately trying to take calls from this entire time.
Yes.
How did they let this man into the White? And I saw Michael Wolff get asked this on the news, and he was like, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know why they let me do this.
I think in ways that become clear as you read the book, he probably thought that he was going to say really nice things about him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's a story in here where he, and it's in the excerpt too, but where, you know, Joe Scarborough and Minka, whatever.
Omika Brzezinski,
go to the White House, like, the week after, like, the second week, like, on day 9 of the presidency, basically. Like, the Muslim ban has come out over the weekend already. And, like, Trump asks them how the first week went. And they're sort of like, Joe Scarborough, like, can't think of anything. And was like, oh, well, I guess it was nice that you had those steel union workers show up. And then finally basically told him, like, maybe it didn't go so great. And, like, he was dumbfounded.
Yeah.
Because
he was mad.
But everybody in the White House was telling him that it was going great.
Yeah.
So it must have been going great.
Well,
like, he didn't have the ability to know. And I think a similar thing is here. He probably just thought that everybody likes him. He had just become president, so obviously, like,
he's very popular.
He's very popular. Like, everybody likes him now all of a sudden. So, like, Michael Wolff's going to like him too. Yeah. I mean, he's going to write a book about how great and wonderful, you know, Donald Trump is as president.
What a winner he is.
Right.
Well, what's one thing that I didn't, because I've never really understood why Hope Hicks was a human being in the White House.
Oh, yeah. She's like a 20-year-old relative of somebody, isn't she?
Was working in PR for Ivanka's company.
That's what it was. Yes.
And so Ivanka's sort of her protector. Yes. Right. But I've always wondered what her job was. I never really understood.
Apparently the first female president, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you've heard.
That's her master plan.
Not Hillary Clinton. It's going to be Ivanka Trump.
That's right.
Turns out, by the way, that Ivanka and Jared are not geniuses. And while I realize we knew they weren't super geniuses, we, I think, all thought they were functional.
Right.
And it turns out they're not. Like, not super functional.
Yeah.
But also, Hope Hicks was literally the person in charge of just telling Donald Trump everything was going great. That was her job in the White House.
Yeah.
If you've ever wondered, before she became the communications director, why she existed, it was as the personal telling Trump everything is great aide.
Right.
She was his she was literally his personal PR person.
Yeah.
Like, he had his, like, boy. And also, everyone in the White House, all these factions had their own PR people. That's, a lot of these leaks were coming from the fact that they had all hired their own PR camps to, like, war with each other. So Steve Bannon and the Kushners, or Jarvanka, as he was calling them, which I think is funny.
Also, it should be Jarvanka, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a genius. He can't help himself. But they were having, like, so they were having warring factions. A lot, Donald Trump was leaking directly to the press, or was at 6:30 every night, returning to his room to make phone calls to his rich friends.
And
he was just leaking all sorts of shit on those phone calls, and then they would call the news.
Yeah.
Or he would just call reporters himself.
Yeah.
He's apparently obsessed with Maggie Haberman. He desperately wants to get a good write-up from Maggie Haberman. And so they keep inviting her back in this tragic story where she keeps going back and writing that he's a buffoon on the front page of the New York Times. And they keep asking her to come back because they desperately want good press from the New York Times. And he doesn't understand why he can't get good press from both Fox News and Breitbart and the New York Times and the legit news sources. He doesn't understand why everyone can't love him.
Yeah.
It's driving him bananas, in fact.
Yeah.
It's one of the main challenges of his presidency. So anyway, this all caused a lot of chaos because almost everyone in Washington is quoted as saying he's a moron in some word, some wording. But so he took to Twitter to defend himself, during which he claimed he's a, quote, stable genius, which
but he's like a stable genius.
He's like a smart guy.
Oh, like a smart guy.
And a stable genius.
Right.
He couldn't even say he was smart without the qualifier of using a Valley Girl slang term to describe how he's not actually that smart. And then also, first of all, generally, geniuses aren't stable. But if he were a genius, he would know that, we do. But also, once you've had to put a qualifier on your genius label, then it's a concern that maybe you're not a full genius.
Right.
In any case, they've been trying to arrange a lot of exciting things this week to make it look like he's presidential. So he met with GOP congressional leadership this weekend, and they all held a press conference after where they look like, remember that Chris Christie video where he looked like he had Stockholm Syndrome, he was a hostage?
Yeah,
They all look like hostages in the photographs as Trump is asked in front of all of them about whether or not he's an idiot and tries to defend himself.
Right.
But I have some overarching thoughts that I want to share.
Yeah.
Because everything is clear to me now.
Please.
First of all, and I've been saying this to everyone, this book finally introduces America to the Donald Trump New Yorkers have always known. It gives you the context that you were lacking in not having grown up with Donald Trump being the buffoon idiot who, you know, took up all the news and leaked his own stories to all the news for your entire life. And so understanding his media operation is, I think, easier once you've read the book, because as New Yorkers, we know that he's a not very savvy media operator. And that's part of why the news kept writing about him, was because he was kind of a joke.
Right.
And he would call with his own I mean, like, he was leaking his own stories to the press all the time, including when he was failing at shit, which was kind of the tragic story of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But so there's that element of it. But also, I now have no doubt, and I had no doubt about this before, but I'm glad that there's now documentation of this, that this man has no agenda. Anyone who's ascribing a, like, sneaky conspiracy theory to him is way overstating his mental capacity.
Yeah.
There are ill-conceived agendas competing within his White House. Steve Bannon had an agenda.
Yeah.
Jarvanka had an agenda.
Yeah.
You know, Renz Priebus theoretically had an agenda that he was never powerful enough to get, you know, to act on. There are plenty of agendas. You know, Mitch McConnell has an agenda. Paul Ryan has an agenda.
Right.
Also, it sounds like Paul Ryan's not a genius either, according to this author.
Well,
now, we know he's not a genius in the sense of having empathy, but we were promised that he was a numbers...
Right,
you know,
that he could do math.
That he could do math, that he was a numbers whiz. And it turns out he might not have that either.
Can I read what... Because Lila took the notes for this podcast very kindly while I was at rehearsal this evening. And I was reading through the notes that she wrote for this. And, like, bust up laughing because this is what she wrote about her theory here. She said, "Everything is clearer to me now, including the fact that Donald Trump is just a tragic buffoon caught in a world of competing ill-conceived agendas and has no personal agenda other than poor impulse control and a non-working brain." And you know, that's it.
That's it.
That's it.
He doesn't have an agenda. So if you're looking for something to tie all of this together, you're not going to find it other than that he wants good press.
That's it.
Him wanting good press is the bottom line.
That's
There's
it.
Nothing else.
Yep.
There's nothing below it.
Yeah.
There's nothing deeper in him.
Yes.
He wants good press.
He wants people to like him.
He's getting bad advice about what will give him good press.
Right.
Because
but he doesn't know.
And he
because
doesn't
he
know.
Can't.
Because he's not a brain thinker. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So in any case, that's been very exciting.
A couple things that I would like to add
yes.
quickly, because as you know, if you've listened to this podcast, I like to feel bad for people sometimes.
He sure does.
People who I shouldn't be feeling bad
Lots
for.
Lots of people that don't
know,
deserve
I like,
his
sympathy. I like to see the good in everyone. That's really what it is.
Brent once found a way to feel bad for Ted Cruz, and that's how I knew that he was irredeemable.
But I think you can sort of get on board
with me
here. He's
a tragic figure here.
Well, no, I'm not even talking about it. I'm done with him.
Okay, good.
But yes, he is a tragic figure because he's an idiot.
Yeah.
And he's an idiot who's become president.
He has to live with being an idiot.
Who no one will ever love because he's an idiot.
Well,
so it's a real
and also,
endless
circle.
The
greatest tragedy, the greatest sort of tragedy and ultimate cosmic joke of all of this, before you start, is that they all wanted to lose because they were going to start Trump TV.
Yes.
And this ruined all of their plans to get richer.
And
this has, in fact, been the very worst thing that could have happened to all of them.
Yes. And this brings me
to your point.
Thank you. Because the person who wanted to lose more desperately than any other human alive.
Mm-hmm.
His wife.
Yes. Oh my God. Melania.
Melania Trump.
She is a tragic
literally
figure.
Moped and cried for days and weeks after he won this election, if you're to believe this book, which I wholeheartedly do.
She doesn't look happy to be the first lady.
She has never once ever looked happy.
No.
Since
she's not.
This entire...
This has been very unpleasant for her.
Right. And one of my favorite parts in the book, because I don't know why, it's just the term, but he's listing all of the reasons that it's like going to be great for everybody when they lose. Like, so-and-so will go, you know, Kellyanne Conway will go off and get a job on cable news, and so-and-so will blah, blah, blah. And then he says, and Melania Trump can go back to inconspicuously lunching. Because like, that's
all she wanted.
That's her story.
That's...
Like, that's what she wants to not ever have to look at her husband.
Right.
She wants to use his
they
money.
They had a big enough house in New York to go do
fancy New York things and not ever have to be dealing with him, and certainly not be dealing with being the first lady.
No.
Like, that's not what she's signed up for.
Absolutely not.
Like, it's not even remotely what she's signed
up
for.
I do wonder if she gets the first lady salary, because you know the first lady gets paid a salary.
Yeah.
To do first lady.
But every
things.
Time I start to feel bad for her, I just have to remind myself that she did voluntarily marry him.
Right. Yeah.
So
also,
I mean, she, you know, made her bed,
and
if you will,
yes, and also all of our beds,
I know.
Because in the past when we have had presidents who are slightly incapacitated by their mental capacity, we've had a strong first lady to back us up, i.e., Ronald Reagan.
The other thing that I have sort of like because Trump himself is like such like an interesting figure in sort of. Being not really that interesting, but just it's always been fascinating to me, and I think that the media had a hard time with this too, in that he is as rich as he is, grew up rich, has never known anything other than sort of like richness to a degree, that he was able to have such a connection with sort of like the you know, the everyman, the working man.
Well, there's
sort of.
A great there's moment where he describes to somebody asks what the term white trash
yes,
means.
Yes, and that is exactly what I
and
was going to bring up. He's on a
they're
plane.
They're like me, but poor.
Yes, he's on a plane with some douche friend of his who's there with like some model who doesn't speak English.
Right.
And one of them says something about poor white trash. And she says, what is this poor white trash? Because she doesn't know the term.
Right.
Yeah.
And he literally says
they're
like
me, but
poor. He
said
they're
like me, but poor.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I know.
Like, that was my head exploding.
That was the most self-aware he's probably ever been.
Yeah, I know. It was like it's sort of a moment of cogent-ness.
But that's also, the other thing that I found really striking here was the degree to which that story parallels Jared Kushner's story as well. Both of them are these guys. They're not from Manhattan. Right. They're very rich. Yes. But they're rich in a way that Manhattanites consider tacky. Right. And they never quite get that. And they try like to do
Jared
all
Kushner,
this.
Jared Kushner, a man who still calls his dad daddy, yeah. like in public meetings. Although, well, they don't have public meetings anymore because his father's in jail. But
not anymore.
Well, not, right, sure. But I mean, no, but, like... You know, a 30-something who will, like, yes. enter a boardroom.
Both of
and
them have sit, very like, scary fathers, but both of them have been searching for approval from yeah. these, quote, sort of, like, this amorphous elite in Manhattan.
Right. I mean, Jared Kushner bought, like, the laughing get. Stock of a newspaper just yeah. so he could play with those players.
Yeah. And not, he, like Donald Trump, doesn't have a sense of how to act like a rich person. He is like a trope of a rich person. It talks about this all the time in the book, how oftentimes he comes off as pretentious and like a snot-nosed idiot
right.
because he doesn't understand how to be wealthy without... He tries to take on the affect of wealth and it just doesn't fit him right because he doesn't really know what he's doing with it, you know?
Because
he's from Jersey. He's just right. a guy from Jersey.
Right.
In any case, other fallout, Bannon's leaving Breitbart.
Yeah.
No idea what's happening next, but
Whoa.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
And Trump cut down his work schedule even further this week. So now
I'm
he
sure.
has more hours of, quote, executive time, which yeah. is while he watches television. Right. And there was a fascinating article in Politico about how when he goes on random seeming tweets about nonsense, he's actually
yes.
just live tweeting Fox and Friends.
He's literally, yes, they went, somebody went through and looked at all of his insane tweets from like early in the morning. And like people were sort of like, what on earth is he doing? Because at one minute he's like tweeting that, well, we'll get to one of his tweet
right.
storms where it's like one second he's like Hillary Clinton should be in jail. And the next minute
he's talking about Palestinians
and nuking North Korea all within like 30 seconds of each other. And they literally looked at the times of when these tweets are and like looked at like the rundown from Fox and Friends.
Yeah.
He's live tweeting Fox and Friends.
If you're wondering
you guys.
What his tweet storms are about, it's just every day
That's
he
it.
Live tweets Fox and Friends for us. That's, you don't have to watch Fox and Friends anymore because
no,
now
you just read the president of the United States Twitter account. Jesus.
Which brings me to one more point before we move on, actually.
Okay, fine.
Which is that I want to say that I don't think that Oprah Winfrey should be the president.
Nor
because
do I
don't think celebrities I think we should be done with celebrities at this
well,
point.
We,
I understand that she could be a great advocate.
Right. Well, and I have...
But
I mean,
she's been fiercely apolitical for her entire life, her entire
yeah.
career, at least.
Yes.
Well, and that, I think, just like Donald Trump, who was
yes.
basically apolitical,
yes.
he's just buying favor with everyone.
Well, and I would like
makes
to...
Makes her not qualified.
Right. I agree. And I would like to point out my foresightedness in this
yes.
topic, because we talked on the podcast
yeah.
once when Dwayne Johnson was talking about
yep.
running for president. And I said, I was like... I think by the end of this 4 years, we're going to decide that maybe somebody with, like, some bit of relevant experience is going to be what
any
we're
bit.
Looking for.
Yeah.
like,
but apparently not, because we're just looking for the left's yeah. Donald Trump.
Well, it was weird. It was, like, Monday morning, it was, like, Oprah 2020, and then this morning, like,
Everyone
the headline
like,
on Huffington Post was, like, slow down, Democrats.
Yeah. yeah.
So, like, you know, we just needed... It was a great speech.
It was a great speech.
We're blinded by a great speech. We had 8 years of a president.
Who gave great speeches.
Only because
it seemed
he
presidential
was giving
because
great speeches.
Obama
so, like,
gave great speeches, and so why
I get
not
it.
Her?
I get it,
yeah.
guys. Like, but yeah, let's settle down.
Let's stop with
let's
the celebrity searching and
yes.
look for somebody who potentially has some idea how to govern.
That's
just
right.
any idea.
Yep.
I got into a lot of arguments in D.C. over New Year's with people who tried to claim to me that that Bernie Sanders wouldn't have been qualified. And I was like, hold huh? on a moment.
Yeah.
While I tell you that he has significantly more political experience than Hillary Clinton
right.
in elected office.
That's true.
So, in any case, I certainly don't want to hear from any of those people that Oprah Winfrey should be the president.
No, agreed.
Moving on, though. All of this excitement also led to one of my favorite things that is going to happen this week. I don't even care what happens the rest of the week, but this is too funny. Today, Trump held, like, these sham congressional negotiations
yeah.
about immigration.
Yeah.
In front of cameras for like an hour just
yeah.
to like show that he has some like grasp of things.
Right.
But at one point during these negotiations, he had to be like reminded, like he started to agree with Dianne Feinstein on something.
Oh, no.
And Kevin McCarthy had to be like, actually, our position is, he had to be ushered back to his own position. So while he didn't sound functionally incompetent
right.
at this meeting, he also didn't seem to know what his position was. And like the last time he spoke to Democrats about immigration, he made a lot of promises that I don't see him keeping.
No, I agree. Yeah, well, this was, like, one of the things, like, if you were watching the news, like, it sort of was, like, one minute he is saying, Like, it has to be a bill of love, right, as I mentioned earlier. And then the next minute, it's like, I'm not signing anything unless they're spending for a wall.
Yeah. It's like, it's because the last person who spoke to him.
Right.
When the last person who spoke to him is Chuck Schumer, then right, he's like, a bill of love. Right. And then when the last person who spoke to him is Steve Bannon, then it's like, we have to have a wall. Like, that's what, like, the last person who speaks to him is who wins that news cycle.
Yeah.
And he literally said at the end, as he was ushering the reporters out, I hope we've given you enough material.
Right.
As if it was just a reality show shoot.
Yeah.
Which it was.
Oh, and going back to the book really quickly, but just because...
Let's go back to the book forever.
But what you just said, I found interesting because everybody knew that it was the last person. And they talk about that in the book, basically. Like, that's why Jared and Ivanka felt like they had to take jobs in the White House, because they knew that they literally had to, at least every once in a while, be the last person who spoke to him.
That's how people were winning the war.
That was literally the only reason that people were like, we have to be physically in this space right now.
Yeah. That's why so many warring factions broke out in the White House, was because everyone knew that he would just repeat the last thing that had been said to him.
Right.
The president. Again, just to remind you who that is. I also wonder if, do you think he could be driven from office if we just never used his name again?
No.
Because I feel like if he was never referred to again, that would be bad press.
That's true.
And we could say to him, listen, we're happy to use your name in media going forward if you just resign from office.
Right.
And then
we'll give you a lot of good
media.
Give
you lots of great press if you, because that's a great choice. I said a year ago.
We'll watch The Apprentice again.
I literally said like a year ago that the best way to get him out of office would be to tweet at him that what a good and popular person does is resign. Like, tweet at him about how great a great guy.
America would love you.
America would love you so much if you just resigned. You know what the best guy does? The best guy would resign in your situation.
Yeah.
In any case, the New York Times' description of everything was really funny, including at one of the opening paragraphs, they said that this all was to show that he could do a job. And then they said the bar, of course, was historically low, given that Democrats and even some Republicans have been describing him as so unstable that he should be removed from office.
Right.
That appeared in the New York Times today, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Of the final deal, he said, I will be signing it. I'm not going to say, oh, gee, I want this or I want that. I'll be signing it.
Sure.
Basically, he's willing to sign anything that's put in front of him.
That's right.
Yeah. As long as the last person who spoke to him tells him to.
Yeah, it makes it really seem like, you know all those memes when he was signing the flurry of executive orders where people were like, it was just like a drawing of a cat that he'd signed, basically. Like, it really makes you think that, like, if someone gave him an executive order that was a drawing of a cat...
He would sign that.
He would sign that as well.
If someone... I mean, he has signed orders in the past because pictures were shown to him.
That's right.
Also described in the book.
That's true.
On two occasions, at least. Right.
Didn't he decide some things about the Middle East because he saw the
women
pictures
in miniskirts?
Miniskirts
and also,
from Iran in like the 60s or something like that?
That was in Afghanistan. And then he also saw children foaming at the mouth after that chemical attack
in Syria.
And decided that we should intervene after all because he cared about the kids.
That's right.
That's the tragedy of Donald Trump, you guys.
Yeah.
He's that easily manipulated.
Yeah.
In any case, never one to shrink away from a little cowardry, Lindsey Graham called it the most fascinating meeting I've been involved in 20 plus years in politics. He's been hitting the media cycle hard defending Donald Trump.
Right. But he also threw some shade at him, I think, this weekend on something.
He went on air to defend him all weekend. That was what he did all weekend.
What?
Yeah. Lindsey Graham, I don't understand what's happening. My other favorite thing about this meeting is that during it, Donald Trump suggested we bring back pork spending. Which is, first of all, wasn't it the GOP that got rid of pork spending?
That's right.
Wasn't that their brainchild?
Yeah.
Second of all, I've been in favor of bringing back pork spending for a long time, I say go for it. But how did he even know that that was a thing?
Right.
But he once again said that in exchange for border security, he would sign DACA. And I just want to remind everyone that this is the exact promise he made to Chuck and Nancy the last time they met with him about this very issue.
Yeah.
He said this exact thing.
That's right.
And then he said, actually, I just meant the wall. And they were like, no.
No, that's not what
exactly.
Right.
So in any case.
Ooh, boy.
Lots of Senate news.
Yeah.
Tina Smith and Doug Jones were sworn in. Big meme with Doug Jones's son, who is gay, giving Mike Pence side eye. Great picture. Recommend you look it up.
I know.
I have some...
My mom sent me a message, and I thought to myself, she usually keeps up on things. I was like, is this... She was like, did you know Doug Jones had a gay son? And I was like, is this when America is learning about Doug Jones's gay son? Did people not know?
Maybe. I don't think so, because it seemed like everyone was... I mean, that meme hit real hard.
I have been looking at Doug Jones' gay son's Instagram account for months.
Well, so, obviously. Well, you're on WeHo Twitter, though. That's separate... It's like how I'm on New York Twitter, and when Dr. Right. Zizmore retired, it was like, you don't even know who Dr. Zizmore is, and yet that right. was all that was on any of my social media.
That's right.
Gay Twitter's like that.
It is.
It's more gay social media, but
I know.
Gay Twitter...
Well, and that's exactly what I told her, too.
Yeah.
I was like...
Of course I knew.
What... I missed that.
Yeah. I'm not a fool. Jesus. No, that's...
Anyway. But it's a great picture.
It is a great picture. Yeah. And highly recommend. Yeah. I have personal worries that Tina Smith will lose us this seat in Minnesota, and potentially we'll also lose our other seat in Minnesota, and then we're just going to be back where we started. That's my personal theory, and we don't have time to go into it now, so I'm moving on. But because other exciting Senate news.
Out of Minnesota.
Out of Minnesota as well. Michelle Bachmann might run for Franken's seat.
If God lets her.
If God lets her. If the Lord does his work. And
right.
I would implore the Lord to do his work. Because there's nothing I would like more than Michelle Bachmann running for that seat. I am, as I think you all know, totally obsessed with Michelle Bachmann.
We had some real great Michelle Bachmann moments.
We had some times with Michelle Bachmann.
I can't remember an actual presidential candidate that I... have been more obsessed with.
Yeah.
Like that ran from either party, just in terms of like needing to, I would, and the one time that we were in her airspace,
it was just
was one of the greatest moments of
obviously,
my entire
it was
life.
Just as great as I thought it would be, if not more.
Yeah.
That was when I learned about my theory about people who want to be smart and are tragically unable to because their own brain will not allow them.
Yeah, she became a conservative because she was reading Gore Vidal books, right?
Yeah. Wasn't that? Yeah, she was reading Burr on a New York City bus, I believe. She was, the tragedy of Michelle Bachmann was that she was really well-read and had just taken the wrong message from every single book. It was amazing. It was amazing the degree to which she was able to take commonly agreed upon themes in American literature and completely misunderstand them and apply them to absolutely wrong policy. Like, it was one, and have you ever read that New Yorker article about her presidential campaign that describes her, like, baking cookies for everyone on the... plain and every moment of a Michelle Bachmann candidacy is a moment to treasure.
And it's okay if she runs, because she won't win.
She can't win. And if by some bizarre stretch of the imagination she did win,
then she did.
Then we would know where we were as a nation. But there's no one I enjoy more in political media than Michelle Bachmann.
I agree.
I totally agree. My favorite thing is that when she was talking about how she might run, she said, and the question is, should it be me? Should it be now? But there's a price you pay, and the price is bigger than ever before because the swamp is so toxic. Mm. Then she said that her and her husband aren't money people. Then she also went on to say how expensive it is to, quote, defend yourself. You can have frivolous lawsuits filed against you all the time, and then what do you do? Like, what is running for office in her world? It's just like a flurry of frivolous lawsuits? What is she even talking about?
Nobody knows.
Are these lawsuits from?
Nobody knows.
Are they libel lawsuits because she lies constantly?
Yeah.
To the degree that at certain points they just stopped fact-checking her because they were just like, she lies. Well, I don't know what to tell you.
If you never heard also Michelle Bachmann deliver a prayer.
Oh, it's something.
You should...
You don't have to be religious to appreciate it.
As soon as this podcast is over.
Get thee to the YouTubes, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's on the level of Sarah Palin delivering a speech.
But way more creepy.
Way creepier. Yeah. Yeah, in other news, Mitt Romney is thinking about running for Orrin Hatch's seat.
Non-stool sitter.
A man who doesn't know how to describe lemonade. Back on the scene.
Yeah.
The reason that we know that he's thinking about it is in part because he changed his location on Twitter from Massachusetts to Holiday, Utah, which sounds like just the kind of place he would live. Like a place that sounds like a fairy tale land for rich people.
Yeah, that's right.
Holiday, Utah. Uh-huh. Of course that's where he is.
Yeah.
I want to remind everyone that...
Well, there's no bar stools and there's lemon wet cold.
Right.
Beverages everywhere.
As far as the eye can see. I want to remind everyone that Mitt Romney... is not and has never been from Utah. He is a rich man who has owned homes all over America, including in Utah, but also including in Southern California. Should he be the senator from Southern California because he owns a car elevator here? I don't think so. You know? I mean, it seems crazy to me that just being the religion that some people in Utah are should not qualify you to be their senator.
No.
That doesn't... He's from Michigan, you guys. And then he was the governor of Massachusetts.
That's right.
Utah is not even in the ballpark of any of that.
No, it's nowhere near either of those places.
No, and it's a wacky state with its own wackiness. It deserves a wacky person of the wackiness that it is.
Lest we forget, someone tried to run for the president of Utah in this last presidential election.
So true.
Which can't be done, by the way, based on the Constitution.
And yet Utah doesn't care.
No, they don't care.
They cannot be stopped.
They can't.
But Mitt Romney...
No, neither can Mitt Romney.
No.
Except when he can be.
He can easily be stopped because he's regularly stopped. That's the tragedy of Mitt Romney. The only thing he's done is be a one-term governor from Massachusetts and be unable to describe lemonade. And the time that he was the governor of Massachusetts, they basically passed the model for Obamacare.
That's right.
So he's not even a good... Right. He doesn't even have good GOP credentials.
Yeah, a man who invented Obamacare and then tried really hard to run against
it. He also, I believe, during his presidential run, described how fun it is to fire people, which is another thing that might not be timely in Donald Trump's America.
Yeah, that's right. By the way, also running for office, one of my all-time favorites, who I have actually supported before.
Well, I'm not afraid to say I have too.
I'm not embarrassed about it.
No.
And I would support him if I lived in Ohio right now again. But... I never lived in Ohio. I lived in Iowa. One of the other states that has too many vowels in it.
As much as I might confuse those two, it feels like Brent should know the difference, but moving on.
Yeah, anyway. Well, I got excited about Dennis Kucinich, you guys.
Yes.
He's running for governor of Ohio. He will never be governor of Ohio.
It doesn't matter.
It does not
matter. We love him anyway.
Much like we hope Michelle Bachmann would never be a senator from Minnesota.
I would love it if Dennis Kucinich became the governor of Ohio.
But we assume that he will not be.
Remember... Brent and I said we were going to support Bernie Sanders in the last election, despite the fact that he would never be a contender, long before all the craziness with Bernie Sanders broke out, in the same, you know, spirit that we support Dennis Kucinich.
Yes.
We're not people who shy away from supporting a far-left candidate who isn't going to win. And look what happened last time. He almost won.
I just want to be friends with Dennis Kucinich
and
his hot wife, and I want to go around
around
the country searching for UFOs with him. That's all I want.
He's a man who looks more like an elf than Jeff Sessions.
That's right.
Has a much hotter wife than Jeff Sessions.
Right. Also, do you know how old he is, by the way? Because he's got very serious case of man-child syndrome.
How old?
Guess. Dennis Kucinich.
I couldn't even... I feel like he's ageless to me.
He's 71.
What?
That's right.
God. That's a man who is of no discernible age.
That's right.
By the way, another favorite Fire and Fury thing is how much Donald Trump makes fun of Jeff Sessions' size and general elfishness.
Oh, yes.
Jeff Sessions is being tortured right now, so you can rest assured that a man that evil is facing
and his Steve worst Bannon demon. Called him Beauregard, too.
Yes, which is
actually his middle name.
And we were calling him Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III for a long time.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy. In any case, Doug Jones, despite being sworn in, there were a lot of articles this week about how he's just going to be a generic middle-of-the-road Democrat, which I don't know why we needed articles about, but the tidbit that I wanted to point out from those articles, which is the only important tidbit in them, because the fact that a Democrat from Alabama is talking about reaching across the aisle is not newsworthy.
The last Democrat we had reached so far, he actually just became a Republican.
Right. He just dove across the aisle at a certain point and stayed there.
That's right.
He has the only African-American chief of staff in the Senate.
What
is going on in the Senate right now?
1 out of 100 is not what we're looking for.
No, that's... What is it? 1637? Like, what are we doing? Like... This is...
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I don't even have words for it, but I'm mad about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that was buried in the bottom of the story instead of just the headline of the story, instead of a story about him being a Democrat who's going to govern like a Democrat.
Yeah.
In any case, there was an interesting sort of blip in the Russia investigation this week. And by the way, going back to Fire and Fury for one more moment.
Yeah.
The thing that I feel like we should all take away from that is that just as I think we all maybe in our heart of hearts knew... There is no way that Donald Trump knowingly colluded with Russia because he just wasn't smart enough to.
Right.
He unknowingly colluded for sure.
That's what I was going to say.
Definitely.
He could have been very, very, very actively colluding
But
with
didn't
them.
Know about it.
Had no
Certainly
clue.
There was no intent to collude with Russia because he doesn't have intent.
No.
The thing...
And he still may not know that he did it.
I'm sure he doesn't.
In a way that
it's hard
he understands why is illegal and against basically everything that America stands for.
Right. He's a man who brought back America first as a slogan, and yet. But the thing that everyone in the White House is worried about with this investigation, and the thing that is making everyone's skin crawl, is that they all have dubious financial ties to lots of sketch people.
Right.
All of them. The development business is a money laundering business, yes, essentially. Well, and so Donald Trump's money is tied up with every crook in the world, right, as yeah, are the Kushners. One of the people who... So Jarvanka was really instrumental in getting him to fire Comey due to inexperience. Steve Bannon claims he was very against it because he knew that it would bring about a lot of questions about why, and also would suddenly open them up to obstruction of justice charges. Yeah. So Steve Bannon was like, you just don't acknowledge it and let it play out. And I think Steve Bannon, as the only person who had read a book in the administration, probably understood better than the rest of them that that would be the case. Yeah. And Steve Bannon likes to start a fire when he can. So he's not one to shy away from making a statement. But the reason that they were so actively pursuing firing Comey was because the Kushners were worried about their own fortune. The Kushner family was lobbying with their own Kushners,
right,
was sending their own Kushners to lobby Donald Trump to tell him to fire Comey because they are worried that they are going to get caught again in some sketch money business.
Well, and
but Donald Trump is most definitely doing illegal things with his money. We all know that. There's no one in the development business who is not in some way dealing with a gray area in terms of financial legality.
Yep.
And that is what the concern is here.
Right. Well,
and that's what they're so worried about.
And that, I think...
Keep our eyes on the prize.
Right, exactly. And that, I think, goes back very much to, and I think that Michael Wolff ties these things together pretty well, too, is that none of them, anybody in this campaign, thought it was going to be an issue.
Because they thought they were
going to
lose.
Because they all thought they were going to lose. So, like, you know, Michael Flynn knew that he had gone to Russia to and been
taken
paid,
money.
Taken money to, like, give speeches there. Other people knew that they had, like, you know, like, all of these people knew that they had shady shit going on in their past, but not one single one of them cared, because I think he even quoted Michael Flynn specifically as, like, well, it's not going to matter because we're not going to win.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it mattered because they won.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... So there was a lot that no one made any effort to cover up, and that's what they're worried the investigation will reach.
Right.
The collusion thing, in Flynn's case, it's credible.
Yeah.
You know, there are people with whom it's credible. In Don Jr.'s case, it's certainly credible because that meeting was clearly some kind of collusion.
Well, if you but read, you know, so...
That's not what we're going
after. I was
going to
say,
here.
I have a very dear friend who has sort of... I actually sometimes get on his case about this because I'm sort of like, maybe you should be focused on the fact that, you know, people are about to not have healthcare. But he spends a lot of time on the dark web, basically, like in a like Russia rabbit hole. And what he always says to me is like, it's money laundering.
Yeah.
It's the money laundering that is going to get them all. It's going to be money laundering that could literally get half of the Senate once they start digging into all of this.
Like, this is dangerous.
It's not him calling Vladimir Putin and say, hey, help me win the election.
No.
That's not what anybody gives a rip about. I mean, it might be what America gives a rip about, but like
way into the story.
Right. But that's not the story.
It's not legal to do that either.
Right. Exactly.
But the collusion story, part of what always bugged me about it was that it didn't seem like Donald Trump would know how to collude.
Right.
So it seemed like Russia might be colluding with us, or not us, but with him.
Right.
But he might not be colluding back, because how would he know how to collude? They weren't co-colluding.
Right.
Russia was definitely trying to intervene in the election.
Right.
But unfortunately, there's a law against it, but it's not like we can make them abide by that law. Donald Trump, we can ask him not to collude with Russia, though. That's not legal. But like, if he didn't know he was colluding, how do we get him on it?
Right.
Well, we don't have to.
Right.
Because it was like in Watergate.
Yeah.
Did it, this wonky, like haphazard break-in that occurred was only half the story. The larger half was that there was a law, like a huge campaign to try to subvert the results of the election in a way that would favor Richard Nixon. And not only that, he was taping everyone. So there was proof of all of it that was just sitting around.
Yeah.
So there were all of these layers that got uncovered, and that was just the tip-off crime.
Yeah.
That was just a ridiculous, nonsense group of people who were not professionals, it turned out, who tipped us off to a larger conspiracy.
Yeah.
This is that.
Yeah.
The collusion charges, as much as they may be credible, are not the story of Donald Trump. The story of Donald Trump is that he's involved in shady financial shit, and we all have known that about him.
Yeah.
But we actually have, we'll have access to that information if we're investigating him.
Right.
In any case, keep your eyes on the prize is all I'm saying. And I will further say that Fusion GPS, who commissioned the Steele dossier, is not going down without a fight. And if I were the Trumps, I would, or the GOP in general, I don't know if I'd fuck with Fusion GPS.
Right. That's who...
They're literally just an oppo research firm. They have shit on everybody.
That's what they do. Yeah, exactly.
Like,
that's who the Clinton campaign, or the DNC anyway, hired to do this to do this dossier that caused, you know, the sort of big initial uproar.
But professional oppo research people. Right. That's what they do for a living. They aren't the right people.
Yeah.
And so they gave testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee about their findings, and then it was never released to the public.
Right.
Until.
Until today. Because, Dianne Feinstein just unilaterally released it. Because basically what they have been saying is they gave, you know, hours and hours of... they went and spoke to the Senate.
Yeah.
Like, under oath, basically, these guys. So the...
But not open to the public.
Right. And the Senate Republicans have sort of been leaking specific things that they like about whatever it is that they said. But they haven't released the whole thing. And so these guys from GPS, Fusion GPS, wrote this...
They wrote an op-ed
in the New York Times. And they were like, we went to the Senate Judiciary Committee and we told them to investigate Deutsche Bank.
Right.
And we know that nothing has been asked of any of these accounts of Deutsche Bank. Like, they basically sort of like listed all of the things that we told the Senate Judiciary Committee that we know that they are not looking into.
Yeah.
So Dianne Feinstein was like, fuck it, here you go. And she released all 350 pages of it.
Yeah.
So you can read that. We haven't yet because it happened hours ago.
Right.
But that's
going to be the news this week.
Yeah.
That's going to be the rest of the news this week.
Yeah.
So in an effort to preserve some news for next week, we're going to instead tell you about Donald Trump's New Year's tweet storm.
Right.
You guys, he really went for it.
Yeah.
On the first day of the year.
Yeah, he did.
Just when we all thought, I'm a little hungover.
Right.
Donald Trump was busy tweeting up a storm.
Yeah. Happy fucking New Year, guys.
That this New Year's tweet storm was, I think, his sort of magnum opus of tweeting so far.
It was good.
It covered a lot of ground. It was more deranged than usual, I think. Because the Michael Wolff thing was about to hit.
Yeah.
Maybe not, because it didn't seem like the White House had access to the book. The book got leaked to every major media source, and that includes the hosts of Comedy Central shows. But somehow the White House was scrambling, unable to get an early copy.
That sounds
right. I don't know what's up with them.
Yeah.
In any case, so the most notable tweet of the tweet storm was the one about how his button is bigger than Kim Jong-un's.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I don't want to know anything about
button size. But is it bigger than the Diet Coke button?
Yeah, that's the real question.
That's the question.
Also, that was when we all discovered that there is no such thing as a button for the nuclear. It's like a series of events that are triggered.
It's like a briefcase. It's the football.
It's the football. It's the nuclear football. Even in the football, then he has to talk to a bunch of guys. Three people have to be go-betweens.
Kim Jong-il might have a
button. He probably has a button.
Yeah. I would believe that.
Yeah, I would believe that too.
Yeah.
I wouldn't believe his button is always successfully launching things, but
that was one of the things in the tweet that I actually did find sort of funny was that he said that his button actually worked.
I love that he called them a depleted and food-starved regime, too.
I know.
I felt like that was more clever than I was comfortable with for him.
Yeah. Well, and I have always contended that that is what... I feel like he could just be so... He could so easily be replaced if we wanted to get involved with some regime change, which we don't.
Right.
But if we did, if you got rid of him... And then said, "Hey, we're gonna feed you one more day of the week."
Like maybe everyone...
they'd be on board, and maybe have you some more electricity. Like this is we could do this.
This is just like a political football with the rest of Asia. It has nothing to do with anything.
I know.
We don't actually care about the people of North
Korea.
I mean, we care about the well-being of the people of North Korea.
Right.
I certainly care about communist propaganda to a large extent.
Right.
But Donald Trump is not caring about the welfare of the people of North Korea.
Correct.
So let's clarify that.
Yes.
But the other tweet topics were. He called for Huma Abedin to be thrown in jail.
Sure.
He threatened to cut off aid to Pakistan and the Palestinians. He got mad at the Democrats because they weren't acting on immigration.
Sure.
He claimed credit for the fact that no one died in a jet plane crash last year because apparently his superior air traffic control policy that isn't different than anyone else's is keeping us all alive. And then my favorite thing. He announced that he was going to do his own award show next Monday at 5 o'clock, either AM or PM, he didn't say, for the Most Dishonest and Corrupt News Media Awards.
Yeah.
And then he had the audacity to postpone it.
Right. Because you were going to be able to watch it live on a plane.
Yes. I was so excited for it. And everyone was excited for it. Stephen Colbert put an ad in Times Square.
He did a four-year consideration.
Yeah, they did four-year considerations. The Daily Show did a four-year consideration ad and a full-page ad in the New York Times. I mean, people really got into it. It was one of the most unified. And I think because of that, Trump was excited because he was like, oh my God, everyone cares about me all of a sudden. So he said he was going to postpone it till the 17th. We will have updates for you at that time about whether or not the most dishonest and corrupt news media awards happen as scheduled. But I, for one, will be furious if they are rescheduled again. And if they are not, if we don't have a full sort of list of the nominees before that time, I'm gonna be angry.
Yeah.
I was at a party on Sunday where we all talked for like at least an hour about how excited we were about this award show. And I was prepared if it turned out that he meant 5 a.m. to wake up at that time.
Right, you would have.
I would have. I was not afraid to be watching the award show live, regardless of which 5 o'clock you meant.
Right.
But in any case, moving on. He scared North and South Korea so much that they're like starting to cooperate now, basically. Jesus. They agreed this week to hold face-to-face talks for the first time in years, largely due to the fact that no one's sure what America's up to and it's making everyone kind of nervous. And also, North Korea wants to send athletes to South Korea for the Olympic Games. Communists love sporting international sporting events like this. And they weren't going to be able to unless they chatted about it.
Yeah.
So that seems like, it seems like they're going to be able to, which I'm excited about.
Well, right. I mean, if we decide to preemptively attack North Korea, which I don't know if you heard today, that people have been trying to talk him out of doing, if you're to believe those stories. That is...
I believe every story at this point.
I know, so do I. That's, you know, while we might send the bombs directly to North Korea, it doesn't turn out so great for South Korea either.
No, it's not ideal. And also, don't fuck with the Olympics.
Right, no.
Everybody loves the Olympics. You know what would make you loved Donald Trump? Is not fucking with the Olympics.
Right, exactly. Yeah, just, that's bad press, fucking with the Olympics.
Yeah.
Good people, press, not fucking with the Olympics.
Right, not fucking with the Olympics is good press. Leaving the Koreas alone, good press.
That's right.
Fucking with the Olympics,
bad.
You will earn my never-ending ire.
Keep it really simple for you.
Yeah, that's right. It's that easy.
Yeah.
He also dissolved that that fake voter fraud panel that was going to investigate voter fraud by creating the pretext for making up voter fraud.
Right.
And therefore, being the pretext for causing allowing
people to not vote ever again.
Yeah. They're still going to stop everyone from voting. Like, don't worry. They will find a way to get this done.
Yeah.
But they aren't going to be able to use the voter fraud panel, which was a sham to begin with. And also, no state would cooperate with it because they kept asking them to turn over their voter rolls. And everyone was like, no.
Right. Although the one thing that I will say about all of these, you know, bills that have been launched to keep people from voting is that they can't actually keep people from voting. I mean, they can make it harder for people to vote. And what they have ultimately done is just cause people to be like, you know what? I'm going to fucking vote because
I'll wait in the line. I'll get the ID.
Right?
Well, that's what happened in Alabama.
I was going to say, leading into Alabama, there were a lot of think pieces about how people weren't going to be able to freaking vote in Alabama.
You know what? They waited.
All the people that it was supposedly going to affect, whether it was poor people, whether it was black people, whether it was whatever people.
They made extra sure to show up to the polls.
They voted.
Same thing happened in 2008.
Right? Exactly.
Remember in Florida how black people weren't going to be able to vote in Ohio too? Because and they were like, fuck it, I'll wait 6 hours.
We're gonna remove early voting days, then you just get longer lines on the actual voting days.
Yeah.
And you know what? Those people still get to vote if they're in line.
Exactly.
So you GOP, go for it.
I mean,
God bless you. Don't.
And like, don't, God bless you.
Right.
But like, you
but
can't.
But if you do, you know, I feel like you mostly do it at your own peril.
And especially in a year like this, it will drive turnout in a way that I think is probably not going to work out for you.
No, agreed.
It seems to drive turnout every time. That's the cruel tragedy of being a grumpy GOP person is that everything drives the opposite of what you're trying to do.
Exactly.
You try to ban gay marriage.
Right.
It's legal everywhere.
Right.
You try to make sure that no one can, you know, smoke pot. I was not the only person who said this because I think even Politico had a piece on this. But Jeff Sessions' crackdown on marijuana at the state level is going to make it so that pot's legal all over the state, all over America.
I agree.
There is no world in which this doesn't end with this just being nationally legal.
That's right.
And you know what? If he wants to start that, that's at his own peril because then it'll be Reefer Madness everywhere, Jeff Sessions.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's watched Reefer Madness, which is one of my favorite films. But he took it maybe more literally than I did.
Yeah.
So this week he rescinded the Cole memo, which was an Obama era memo that allowed states to kind of do their own thing. It told the Justice Department to kind of like, or federal authorities to kind of like butt out.
Right.
They were like, if states want to make it legal, like, we're just not going to waste federal money dealing with that.
Right.
There are actual crimes that get committed at the federal level in America that it would be better if the Justice Department investigated instead of going and cracking down on people smoking pot.
Right. Well, the thing that, you know, a lot of people have pointed out, which I think is important to remember here, because this is sort of twofold. Yes, Jeff Sessions hates marijuana because he is the type of person who literally thinks, because these words have come out of his mouth, that people who smoke marijuana are the same as people who are doing heroin.
Right.
So, but
he also hates blue states.
Right. He also hates blue states. But the other thing that he loves is private prisons.
So true. Yeah.
Nobody loves a private prison more than Jeff Sessions does.
Than Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III.
Exactly. And you need to be arresting poor black people.
Yeah.
Smoking marijuana. Prisons. If you want to fill up those prisons and keep building more.
The problem is the number of rich white people that also love marijuana who rely heavily now on it being legal because it's now a major industry.
Right, but we're not going to jail those people, though.
No, but we are going to cut down on their customer base. Well, I think that this is the thing that's going to drive this not working is going to be the fact that this has become a major industry in a number of states that rely heavily on for tax
money.
Well,
it's like, you know,
Colorado literally lowered the tax on it because they were rolling in money from marijuana sales. California, it just became legal a few days ago. We don't have any dispensaries set up yet, but I guarantee it's about to be
the same
thing.
Because the lines, there's like two in West Hollywood and they had lines down the street.
Well, not surprised.
You would have seen local news from here. This is literally a state where you can
get a medical card for almost any nonsense thing, and you are paying a 15% tax on these dispensaries, and yet a line down the block.
Right. I have a medical marijuana card, and I made an appointment to get it at a place where you can make an appointment every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Because that's how long it takes.
Yes. You go in, you say, I'm feeling a little anxious, I'm feeling a little sad, my leg hurts, whatever it is, and they're like, oh, okay, here's a card. Like, it's that easy, and yet people are willingly paying 15% in taxes to go to a dispensary where it's legal. That's how much people love pot. People love it. I don't know what to say. And people in the West love it extra. The West is a place that really like feels at home with some marijuana. So I don't know. I just don't feel like this is the strategy you want to pursue. Like a bunch of enraged potheads doesn't sound like a scary thing. But I feel like a bunch of enraged businessmen does.
And that's what this is.
Meanwhile, Kevin DeLeon came up with a kind of exciting theory of how we could avoid the tax situation.
Yes.
The start tax or the
state salt.
Sorry, start. That's about children funding. The salt tax situation where he basically pitched that we make our state taxes into like a charity donation where you'd be donating to like the Fund for California or something like that.
And then you can write those off. Right. On your federal taxes. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
It's like an end around of the...
Now, the problem we're having is that so many people have had to resign in the wake of Sacramento sexual harassment scandal that we don't currently have the votes to pass this plan.
That's right.
However, I'm excited to see that he's thinking out of the box.
Right, because
he's also running for Senate. Yes. I want every state that is in this situation to start thinking out of the box
I want some ideas on my desk.
My idea, personally, was to just raise our corporate tax rate to what it had been and be like, good luck leaving.
Right.
You're going to move to Kansas and all of these educated workers are going to move to Kansas where nobody wants to be? Sam Brownback's Kansas, that's where you want to move?
No.
Like, of course not. Like, my favorite parable for this, and obviously I'm sure there's now plenty of companies that have moved to New Jersey from New York. However, when Goldman Sachs thought that they would get a better deal buying real estate and paying taxes in New Jersey. Yeah. They built this huge gleaming office tower in Jersey City, which is literally directly across the river from the financial district. There is a ferry that goes directly from like right outside the World Trade Center to their building, basically. Uh-huh. And they could not get anyone to move there. Everyone was like, fuck you, I'm not going to New Jersey. So they basically had to move all their support staff out there who are all mad about it because no one fucking wanted to work in New Jersey. And that's New Jersey, which again, you can just take a ferry directly to the building.
Right. Yeah.
People were just like, fuck this. I want to work in Lower Manhattan. I didn't fucking move to Connecticut so that I could work in fucking New Jersey. In any case, my point is, I think that one way that you can attract smart workers, and a lot of these are industries that rely heavily on intellectual workers. They're all intellectually
based
is what I meant. Is that you can provide a state that knowledgeable people would actually want to live in. And one of the ways you can do that is by taking that tax money for ourselves.
That's right.
And
And giving the marijuana.
And giving the marijuana. Like, they're not going to move to a state where they don't have the right to do anything. And also, those states don't want these people.
No.
Are you going to tell me that Kansas is going to be thrilled to take all the Apple workers who are then going to turn the state blue and that's going to be a marijuana and abortion-fueled frenzy over there? Like, that's not... It's going to be gay marriage up the wazoo all over Kansas, and it's going to be because Apple made the decision to move there. Do they want that?
No.
They really think they can take away the salt deduction and not have that happen? Like, slow your roll, everyone. My point is that we should be thinking of creative solutions to this, and I think this is a great one.
Kansas is awful.
Kansas is awful. If you take anything away from this podcast, let it be that. In two final news stories that are both about how stupid everything is. That Republican, that race in Virginia for the remaining holdout delegate seat went to the Republican after they determined it was fully tied.
Right.
And then it went, they had to pick names out of a bowl. But this was literally, the plan was this. They put two names in a bowl.
Yeah.
And then picked one name out of the bowl. And then someone else had to pick the other name out of the bowl. And then one person just got to be the winner.
What?
But I didn't know that. Picking things out of a bowl requires more than two things to be in the bowl. That's not how bowl picking works.
Right.
That's
ridiculous. Don't need both things picked out of the bowl.
No, you only need one. Well, they needed the other to prove that there had been both names in the bowl.
Oh, sure.
They could have showed us both names going into the bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, the bowl was not the right method for this, is all I'm saying. Toss a coin.
Right, sure.
That's how you solve a two-person debate.
Or have one of those bingo things where it's got 50 things in there and 25 of them are one. And,
there are better ways to pick names for a draw. This couldn't have been the best one.
No.
But it was Virginia, so what are you going to do?
That's right.
And in final news, they are facing what everyone has been calling a lizard blizzard in Florida, which sounds on brand.
You guys, there have been a lot of terrible names for things that are going on weather-wise now.
The
because
bomb
you
cyclone?
Had the bomb cyclone.
That was not fun.
We're having terrible mudslides here, which is not a fun name necessarily.
It's
terrible. It makes it sound fun because it has the word slide. But meanwhile, just today, 13 people died in Santa Barbara.
As usual, the weather is fucking all of us over. This has been a very alarming year. If ever there was a sign that Donald Trump has brought about the end times, let it be the fact that the weather has been fucking nonstop crazy all year.
And that he moved to Jerusalem.
Our embassy.
The embassy to Jerusalem.
In Israel. But in any case, in Florida, the bomb cyclone hit and it got really cold. The whole South had a crazy cold snap.
Yeah.
And during that cold snap, some of their wildlife is cold-blooded down there.
Yeah.
And so iguanas...
Keep in mind that Florida has terrible wildlife.
Terrible. Death. Defying wildlife.
We're not defying.
No.
Death-bringing
wildlife. But apparently it was so cold that iguanas were unable to move because they're cold-blooded.
Right, they live in trees.
They live in trees.
Which I don't like.
No, I don't like that. Giant lizards living in trees? That's
nonsense.
You
remember when in Guam the snakes were falling from
the
trees?
The tree snake problem. And they were dropping rats into the trees. Poisoned mice into the trees. And then there were spider problems. It was to kill the spiders that were causing the tree. It was all of that was connected. Spider, snakes, and mice were all connected there. But my point is that iguanas are falling out of trees.
Right.
And they
Our
have
other
had to
point
issue...
is Florida is also awful.
Yes. They have had to issue...
Do not go to Kansas or
official
Florida.
Guidance in Florida to tell people not to touch the iguanas that have fallen out of the trees because they're not dead. They're just cold. I don't like that one bit. And I don't want to even think about the number of other cold-blooded animals that are going to be doing weird things in the wake of this. Because you know what else are cold-blooded?
Crocodiles.
Crocodiles.
Or alligator, whatever.
Whatever they have there,
who knows?
Yeah.
I don't think it's crocodiles.
No,
I think it's alligators. Yeah. I know. Is that going to cause them to eat more babies?
Exactly. What do we even have for us now? Right. What's going to happen now?
Right. Is it going to cause more sinkholes to open up?
Probably.
Once everything melts?
I would imagine. Puddles forming under the ground, that can only lead to sinkholes, right?
That's science.
Stay out of Florida is our advice in this situation. And also, if you see an iguana that's fallen on the ground and is not moving, don't touch it.
Right.
Don't ever touch an iguana.
What? I was going to say. Don't touch a floor iguana. Don't have a pet iguana.
No, don't have a tree iguana. Don't touch an iguana in any format.
No, don't touch one on Hollywood Boulevard.
No, exactly. Wherever you are, iguanas are bad news. And in fact, all lizards should be treated with some degree of caution. Take the advice of two Californians.
That's right.
On your lizard consumption. In any case, that's the news this week.
Oh, boy.
This was our longest break ever, I think.
Maybe.
But
yeah,
it was the holiday, so deal with that.
Yeah.
Also, it's who can keep up anymore?
And I was going to say, there have been times where we've taken breaks and when we come back, we're like, holy cow, man. Like, we thought that we were going to be safe. Like, over the summer, it's we thought we were going to be safe. And for the first week of the holidays, I was like, we're really going to make it a spell of 2 weeks. and not have shenanigans.
Untrue.
And we
should have known better. Donald Trump is literally the president.
I know.
Yeah. But we'll be back next week, and from now on, we'll be back for the most part. Right. We're more back now.
Yeah.
The holidays are over. Back to work, and we will be bringing you all of the Lizard Blizzard news that you can handle. That's right. So, deal with that. Yeah. Talk to you next week.
Bye.